It's Watchlist Wednesday. We're kicking off today with our new segment called Overreact to a Trailer. It's something the internet loves to do.
True Detective 3 is going to be so fucking dope. It's going to be so good. I'm legitimately very jacked up for it.
This teaser almost made me want to watch True Detective 3 less.
Why?
Because, like, nothing fucking happens.
I can't stand
the internet overreaction to teasers. Not even trailers. Teasers. Like, 7-second clips people will take out their dick and start jerking off.
Did you just have it on?
No, I watched it and I don't know anything about the show.
That's your fault.
What's happening?
You could have watched it and learned things about it.
What's going to happen in this season?
Okay, so Mahershala Ali is a detective. Obviously, this spans decades because we see Mahershala Ali age.
That we're clearly going to operate on two different timelines.
Okay, so we have Mahershala Ali, detective in Fayetteville, Alabama. Oh, actually, it's in the Ozarks. It was filmed in Fayetteville, Alabama. You see this, the kids go by on their bikes, right? Then you see Mahershala Ali taking a picture of a bike like it's a crime scene. Then you see, like, a serial killer of letters that say, Julia and the kids are safe and fine. The kids should laugh. The kids got kidnapped. Mahershala Ali doesn't know the whole story because his brain is a bunch of missing pieces. He says, the things I know, the things I've seen would do more harm than good. He says he wants to know the full story. He has that dope line that this piece is more haunting than anything. That's a Pizzolatto classic right there. I mean, like, you know what's happened. The entire premise of the show is that it spans decades. Mahershala Ali forgot things. There was a horrible kidnapping where serial killers sent letters saying that they have the children.
How many times did you watch this trailer?
I watched it twice. I watched it once last night, and I watched it once before we talked about it.
I watched it once, and it didn't get me going at all. It's like too vague.
I described in pretty solid detail with the season. It's not that vague.
Oh, I mean, okay. If you're telling me there's a kidnapping and that the detective is investigating it, okay.
But, like, you didn't know that because you didn't watch it. You just had it on.
Okay,
I hate True Detective. This is
no.
Stupid.
All right, there's a kidnapping. I knew there was going to be a detective researching a crime, John. I don't think you needed to
But you
me
didn't
that.
Know what the one was, and it's very clear. Right, so you didn't watch a trailer. You can't dislike a trailer you didn't pay attention to.
That trailer does. Okay, the story of him researching kidnapping does not really move the needle for me. I knew it was going to be a violent crime of some sort.
Then what would move the needle?
I don't know. That's why. Not the trailer. I can't fabricate a trailer that's going to excite me.
If there was a violent crime with a cool flashback,
True Detective season 1 at the end of, like, the first or second episode where Reggie Ledoux came out in his gas mask and he was like 9 feet tall, I was like, holy shit. Something like that. That would have got me excited.
Something from an actual episode.
Something that was, like, visually, like, holy shit, I need to see that episode. There was nothing in that.
When he's got the guy duct taped with a fucking bunch of AKs, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't remember that because I was like, this is not going to be that good. I was like, here's a trailer for a show that's going to be poorly written. We also have
HBO. It's got the best part is, too, is they're back to their roots. They got the creator of Deadwood helped write this thing. The last time there were too many cooks in the kitchen across the board. There were too many directors, too many writers, too little time, too many actors. Now we got one guy. Season 1 was about Russ Cole. Marty was a great addition. Marty was a good sidekick.
I didn't know. It was a pretty solid duo right there.
It was a solid duo, but we always talk about Russ Cole. Yep. Russ Cole was the star.
Yep.
So Mahershala Ali is going to be the star. It's, what's his name? Stephen Dorff, who I can't picture where he's from.
He's got one of those faces where it's like, oh, I know.
It's like he's like a 90s guy, it looks like. Like, oh, yeah, you were like on red carpets in the 90s with Tara Reid.
Yeah.
Something like
that.
He just has that look about him. I think it's probably the soul patch.
Probably.
But he's back in it. And it's like, I think he's going to be the sidekick. Mahershala Ali, who can fucking carry a billion pounds on his shoulders, is going to carry the season. It's going to be awesome.
We also got this HBO, like, monster compilation of all the things to come in 2019, highlighted by Game of Thrones clips. I mean, that trailer thing was awesome.
That was
a fucking unbelievable compilation. If I'm at another network, I watch that, I'm like, oh.
Like Netflix just beat,
they're like, oh,
for the, for the first time ever, they just beat, in 2018, they beat HBO. HBO had like a 2-decade run as the most nominated Emmy channel. And Netflix 2018 was the first time ever that they got nominated for one HBO.
HBO's coming back swinging.
HBO was like, fuck that, we back.
Flex on them.
They have, like, not only do they have this, first of all, the people going nuts, Game of Thrones people going nuts because there's a scene, most of those scenes were old scenes.
Yeah.
But there was one scene that even looks like an old scene. It's when Jon and Sansa hug. It looks like when they first met at Castle Rock? Okay. Castle Black? Or is it Castle Rock? I don't know. I forget. But I guess if you look closer, they're actually at Winterfell.
Okay,
so that's for the new one. They've not seen. They've not been.
And you know how you want to talk about overreacting to the trailer. You give the fucking Game of Thrones fans a little taste of something new, and they're gonna be fiending like, oh my god, they're at Winterfell.
It's really like they hugged at Winterfell. Oh my god! And like I don't know what I could even think of, but they are the. I'm sure the Game of Thrones Reddit threads are going nuts already. Without a doubt.
You also got Meryl Streep added to Big Little Lies. That show's gonna be fire.
What does it cost to make that show? Like, people talk about Game of Thrones all the time with how expensive the shots are and how they do like three season finales, so even the people doing them don't know which one it is.
Right.
Because they don't want it spoiled.
How about when you just have like 45 Oscar award winning fucking people?
Every single monster actress in the world.
I mean, whatever. If it works, keep moving.
Even in that trailer, which these probably won't come out this year, but like, they're doing The Spaceman's Wife, HBO. Mm-hmm. They're doing The Watchmen.
Yeah, that's got a series now. Yep.
There was one other big one, too. I forgot what it was.
But and shout out to our guys from Pod Save America somehow getting that HBO money. Fuck you guys.
Tommy, what the
fuck? Fuck you guys.
Tommy even says...
Hook it up. I mean, he's like your opening, like, hey, like the 10 minutes before the KBC radio's on or some shit.
So he goes, I don't know how we got here. That's the whole part of the trailer. I don't know how the hell we got here.
Fuck you guys. Speaking of Deadwood is coming back, by the way.
Yeah, it's a movie right?
Yeah, is it a movie or a season? I don't know.
It's coming back as
you got to get on Deadwood.
I know.
The first season of Deadwood is fucking epic. Very similar to Deadwood, like a new age, modernized version. Yellowstone. I am all the way in on Yellowstone. I mean, I can't think of a show I will recommend more than Yellowstone in the past few years. It's that good. It's on the Paramount Network, which is a Spike TV. Anything goes. I mean, you can fuck, you can show nipples, you can show everything on TV, man.
Ass, fuck, like just saying the word fuck. Hard fucking.
Big like, time fucking. They throw up against the wall, like fucking.
But you know what? I do have to bring a little negative aspect to it here.
No, you can't. Try, go ahead. It won't be negative.
The daughter is the wife from Vince Vaughn's wife in season 2. And now I just think of her as that. And all her lines, which I probably thought were good before I realized it, come off as corny.
No, they're good. You have to watch the rest of the season. You're gonna love her by the end, man. She is one fucked up lost soul. She is broken.
She fucks one of the cowhands, and she says something as she's walking out of the room, like, I always remembered your dick being bigger. And then she closes the door, and she goes, you hear from the other room, go, guess that's just the nostalgia in me. And it's like, that sounds really corny now that I realize who you are.
Dude, watch the rest of the season. I promise you, you'll be in love with Beth Dutton. Kevin Costner. Badass. I watch Yellowstone and I realize how much of a pussy I am. I am not a man. I am not masculine. These guys are fucking, when men were men and they're riding horses and they're drinking whiskey and fucking chicks and fighting. That's what life should be about.
It's bad, like historically and things like that, sociologically. But I'll tell you what, man, I love a good cowboy and Indian story.
I mean...
like, the Indians just keep being like, you stole our land! It's a little bit one-sided. Don't care anymore, I'm keeping all of it.
It's a little bit of a one-sided fight, but it plays on television. Let me tell you a little quick little story, by the way. I got beef with Verizon Fios. I watched the entire season. I'm on episode 9, the season finale. I actually say to myself, Kevin, you don't want to burn through the whole season already. You want something to look forward to. So I stopped watching. I watched some baseball. I go back. The finale is just poof, off of on demand.
Really?
It was gone. I had to wait till the next day. So the lesson here is always binge through the whole thing. Watch TV whenever you possibly can. We got this magic show on Netflix, Magic for Humans. The clip is going viral where they seemingly convince two dudes that they are invisible. I cannot imagine this is real, but much like Santa Claus, I choose to believe they convince, with a bunch of actors, they convince these guys that they are actually invisible and cannot be seen. And if there's any realness to it, it's fucking hilarious.
It's very, very funny. But wouldn't you just grab someone?
Well, he taps people on the shoulders, and they react. They're like, because they're like, I couldn't see you.
You know what I mean?
At one point, he's going through someone's bag and he pulls out a bottle of wine and they're like, look, the bottle's floating. So they do just play into it as if there's an invisible person walking around. I mean, the brain in me is telling me that it's not real. But like I said, choose to believe.
Yeah, it's a Kevin from The Office. I relate that to Kevin from The Office rather than Santa Claus. But it's like, come on, man, believe in something. And this was... just watching, and it's kind of one of those things where, yes, it's stereotypical. It's one of those things where you kind of go, like, a black guy reacting to comedy is funny. Man. Like, it's very
a black
funny.
Guy reacting to magic is funny.
When
10
he's
times
sitting
out of 10.
There, he's sweating like he's got pit when, stains like his KFC.
Bro, when
he's like, he's just like, oh.
When they reveal him and he's back, they pull the blanket off. He's going. Like, gang, I'm back. I'm back from being invisible. All right, we're wrapping up today with On the List and Off the List. Off the List for me is The Sinner, season two.
I
came in hot and like episode 3 and 4, I'm like, this just seems like a mess. I don't know where it's going. I don't know what's happening. Season one had such a like specific storyline to follow. Jessica Biel was awesome. Harry Ambrose was new. Now it's kind of like, I love Carrie Coon, but I don't know.
See, I stopped at episode 2, and I'm going to go back to it.
Yeah.
But it's like all of last season, and season 1 and 2, or episode 1 and 2 this year, it was like Wednesday night, I'm putting on The Center.
Yes. You know what happened? It was Wednesday night, 10 o'clock came around, I turned off Yellowstone, started to watch The Center, and I was like, I'm going back to Yellowstone. That's how I know. Yeah. So, Off the List is Sinner. On the List, coming out August 31st, Jack Ryan. Jim from The Office, John Krasinski, is back.
I don't think I've ever come out with this. I'm a humongous Jack Ryan guy.
I mean, you watched every single Jack Ryan movie the other night.
I love Jack
One
Ryan.
One night.
I'm a big Jack Ryan fan. I think it's all wildly entertaining. This has got pretty good reviews. I think it's like 3.5 to 4 out of 5 stars is what it seems to be getting. It's like, you know, an entertaining thing. It's John Krasinski. John Krasinski, it's going to get huge shows just because, like, people love John Krasinski.
Love him.
My mom, I was home this weekend. My mom was, like, on her smart TV, was like, John, make sure you get my Amazon app. I said, why do you need the Amazon app? What's
your
thing? She's like, I've been paying for Prime for 10 years. I never order anything on Amazon. I'm ready to start taking advantage of that. I want to watch the new John Krasinski show. Like, you're going to hate it. You don't even like action shows. No. She's like, oh, is that John what it's Krasinski. About? Like, fucking Jack Ryan, but it doesn't matter.
He might be one of the few universally beloved people.
Yeah.
Like, I've never met anybody who's like, fuck John Krasinski.
I don't know
if he can pull this off, to be honest, though.
He
did the 13 hours.
He was pretty good in 13 hours. Right. I mean, 13 hours was like,
it's always like, well, this is Jim from The Office trying to be an actor.
See, he doesn't come off to me as Jim from The Office. Like, is Steve Carell still Steve Carell from The Office to you?
No, but John Krasinski still is. He has, Steve Carell's gone on to do a lot. John Krasinski has not done enough for me to shake Jim from The Office.
I don't think it has to do so much with his acting or with like his professional career. I think it's like him and Kimmel have like that fun little beef, and he's always like BuzzFeed's always talking about him.
He's like a power couple with Emily Blunt.
Yeah, he's done enough other things, or he's just like he's visible enough that it's not always related right back to Jim.
You know what I need him to do? He needs to be a villain.
And you know what else?
Be like a fucking
he grew a beard.
Rapist one time.
He grew a beard.
Yeah, that too. That helps. The beard.
He's
totally
so young
you.
As Jim.
Yeah.
Like, I don't look at Neil Patrick Harris as fucking
Doogie Howser
anymore. It's like, you just look so different. It was 15 years ago.
He needs to do more. He will still be Jim from The Office. Unless Jack Ryan is that baller shit. So that'll be August 31st. Tom Clancy on Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime doesn't get enough love either. You know what?
It's getting there.
Sneaky Pete was so good.
Awesome.
Season 2 of that. Sneaky Pete was awesome.
I'm almost positive they're doing season 2.
But I feel like that was like 2 years ago that came out.
Goliath is good too. Amazon Prime is bringing the heat. Netflix better watch your ass because Hulu and Amazon Prime.
I spend so much goddamn money on television.
As you should.
It's wild.
It's the most important thing in the world. Spend money on a high quality couch. Somebody sponsor us. And a television because they're the most important two things in your entire life. Let us know what's on your list, what's off the list. Tweet us at KFC Radio and we'll talk about it next week on The Watch List.
Riverdale.
Riverdale. These fucking guys with their Riverdale.
Really struggling to get this up.
Cool. All set.
I'm totally laid back.
Good.
I even put the microphone in my laid back stance.
There you go. That's how we like it
rolling
here, man.
Rolling deep in my 6-foot.
It's another edition of KFC Radio. Very special guest Rob Riggle is here with us. What's up, Rob? How we doing?
Hey, I'm doing well.
You do look relaxed. I like that.
Totally chill.
The beard's a nice touch. I don't know if I've ever seen you with a beard.
Beard's new to me.
Yeah. You got a real groom too?
And that's another thing. I know nothing about beard maintenance at all. I grew this for a pilot I just shot for Fox. They wanted to wear the beard, so I got the beard. Anyway, so this new, and I just got past the itch phase.
Oh, I can't ever get past that. I shave every time.
It's driving me nuts.
Yeah.
So I had to go. I went to the mall the other day, and I was like, I went to the Art of Shave.
Yeah.
Art of the Shave.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I know nothing. what do I got to do? And of course, they were like, you need the lotion, you need the cream, it. You need the oil.
$1,000 yeah. later.
Yeah, you could get this one brush, but you need the $200. I'm like,
I like how I'm sitting there nodding in agreement. Like, the art of shave. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm an adult man.
John, I don't think of the beards in your future, John.
I don't think so either.
It's not a strong suit for you.
It's not. It's yeah. not. This is the way it's always going to be. It gets like kind of red and ugly and patchy. It's yeah. Paul Pierce.
How long have you been working that?
This, I don't know. Like, I don't.
Well, he's I've never, this I is 6 weeks. This
I haven't
six
used
weeks.
A razor since high school, so yeah. I kind of just like trim it and then whatever it is, it is.
Have you let it go? Have you said I'm gonna push there. It? I'm gonna push it.
It no, just doesn't, it doesn't stop. It doesn't. It gets bad. I get the real neck beard. I'm like Jay Cutler. Not Cutler. Cutler. I mean, Cutler had the neck beard for a while. Who was the quarterback before Cutler? Grossman.
Yeah, Rex Grossman. Yes.
Grossman had like the real neck beard. I get that. It's ugly and red. It's horrific.
Who was I thinking? Doesn't Andrew Luck have a neck beard?
Yeah, yeah. Luck's got a neck beard. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's too much. I shave.
Yeah.
I shave it.
Yeah, yeah. You got it good, man. You got it good. Listen,
it must be nice to have that talent where you're just like the Fox execs want a man. Like I'm one.
I'm like I can do that.
I'll come back when I hit puberty. You're looking for someone else. It's not me. I'm not your guy.
Well, Rob, you are a man. You're a man's man. I feel like.
Guys, I'm glad you see it. I'm glad you guys get yeah. it.
The beard is I'm surprised it's your first beard because it does kind of fit your whole like aura. All right. There was Renaissance man here. I'm in the Marines. I act in every big movie ever. I did TV. I do this, the NFL. I mean, like.
Your word's not mine, but you're not wrong. Yeah, yeah. Keep it going, baby.
I mean, when was the last time you said no to something, Rob?
Exactly. I don't.
Amen.
That's a huge, I'm getting better at that later in life. When you start out in this business, and still to this day, you eat what you kill. Mm-hmm. So you don't say no.
Yeah.
You never say no to right. a meal.
I'm a very big believer, especially because we're not actually talented. We're just kind of faking it here. And so I'm like, there's going to be a morning where it just goes away, where it's people just stop fucking caring about what I have to say. So I'm going to cherish every single day I can.
I'm telling you, if you live in the arts or entertainment or media, there is that cloud that you feel, mm-hmm. and it's always over your shoulder, and it's always over your back going, it's coming for you.
Yeah.
It's coming for you.
I mean, it comes for everybody.
People are going to notice that you're full shit one day. Like, yeah. You're fucking nothing. And one day they'll get through to that.
All right. You can do, you know, is just do your best,
right.
and it'll all work
itself
out.
Try to stave it off
as
long
as
you
can.
Do you think that because you came from, you had the Marine background, you weren't necessarily like a actor from day one, but
yeah.
do you think that you have a different mindset than
I was a theater and film major in college,
so you were focused on it.
I always wanted to do it, but I also had a real job for a very long time, and I think a lot of people in the arts never do that, have a real job,
right?
And I think that grounded me
absolutely
a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave me a realistic approach to life, mm-hmm. as well, where you're like the world, because a lot of artists are narcissistic and that serves them. It's not necessarily, it is a bad thing, but it's not necessarily a bad thing for what they do.
Right.
But they tend, and especially as they go on in life, they're not as connected to
the real sense of reality. Yeah.
The fact that you weren't in the pussy posse in high school, yeah. right? Like, I was in Afghanistan. I wasn't in the pussy posse, so I have a little more realistic take on how this stuff works.
Yeah, you kind of understand what it's like to have a really bad boss.
Yeah,
to have a
to
good
know
boss,
how lucky you were. To, like, yeah, and, you're making and, money to pretend on stage,
yeah, and you learn like, oh, you know, I'm at this level and I have bosses and I have to, if I want to work my way up, you know, you got to kiss ass, you got to work mm-hmm. hard, you've got to show initiative, you got to, you know, you got to learn how to work well with others. It's just life skill sets that we all, the majority of people get
that most
by,
people
by,
in your
by
industry
entering
don't.
Adulthood yeah. and right. going out on your own. And a lot of times, you know, life in the arts doesn't lend itself to that.
Yeah.
But it lends itself to other great things like amazing creativity and amazing
yeah. There's the good with the bad,
yeah.
but I just don't ever feel like we're ever gonna get the behind the scenes footage of like a Rob Riggle diva freakout. Where, you know what I mean?
It's coming. Yeah. It's coming.
Give it some time. It's only been a few years.
Yeah. Ask me another fucking question like that.
I mean, I was writing down the list here, man. And it's like, for people who just like entertaining movies and good TV, it's the Hall of Fame lineup. Step Brothers, The Hangover, The Jump Street Movies, Talladega Nights, The Daily Show, SNL, Other Guys. You've made appearances on The Office, Always Sunny, like everything that people like.
Good.
Right?
Good.
But here's the thing.
You left out 30 Rock. That's my favorite.
30 Rock, yeah. 30 Rock, Arrested Development, Chappelle Show. I mean, literally, it's the who's who, right? But out of every movie you've done, TV show, appearance, whatever, I think your finest work is something that never made it to air.
Oh, I lay it on me.
The,
I can't wait to hear
the
this.
Improv scene in Step Brothers.
Oh, where you are the heart attack.
The heart attack where you're roasting Brennan. How does that get cut from the movie?
I talked to Adam McKay about it, and he was like, it breaks my heart to cut it.
Because
it tested through the roof when they were testing the movie, where they're like, the one comment, the guy was, never cut this scene.
Yeah.
And they had to, because the overall storyline for Will's character, in that scene, he was too passive, the heart attack scene. And they wanted him to be more aggressive about wanting the Catalina wine mixer.
Got it.
So he was like, I want it, bro. You know, I want to snap necks and cash checks. I want ass, you know, all that. So that his character had to lean into it more. So, and that was a reshoot. The whole pal scene was a reshoot.
Okay.
Which we also improvised that entire scene as well.
Yeah.
But the first scene was we shot during principal photography, the one with the heart attack. And again, we were improvising so much on that movie. It was the most fun I've ever had on a movie.
I feel you get a script and you're just like, all right, whatever, maybe.
Well, when you're doing stuff with Adam McKay and Will Ferrell, it really can. It can be just like that. You could make two more movies off what's left on the cutting room floor of his movies. And he's down for improvising, Adam and Will, because Adam's over in Video Village screaming, how about this? You know, you're like, oh my God, that's genius. Let's do it again. Go. So we started doing that scene, and we just started screwing around. And I was getting so worked up talking about the balls.
Purple head. Yeah,
so I on one of the takes, I got so animated and amped up and visualizing it, and I started bulging the neck that I just went, and I went down, and Will started he couldn't get enough, like, and so then that's when Adam Scott walks in, right? I think, and then but what happened was I was willing to be dead for the whole scene, but then I realized I'm missing out on all this stuff, so I just literally go, I'm coming back to life. Fuck this. So I just came back to life. And then that made Will lose it even more. And so then it was all free for, we were literally just trying to kill each other, and it worked. And we just made each other laugh. Like when we were actually at the Catalina wine mixer, there's some footage of in the blooper reel or whatever, the extras on that DVD, where, you remember when I tell him he's got to change his face? Or I'm going to change it for him. We did so many different passes at that. Like, I came up to him because Randy, my character, is just this high-octane liability.
Yeah.
You know, he's just bad news. I play Adam Scott's henchman. You know, I'm one of his brother's henchmen. But I'm a hot mess, clearly. And so, like, we did passes where I came up and I'd be like, hey, Brendan, come here. You know, and I was like, and I'd be all coked out. And I'd be like, how do you get hypothetically, how would you get a body off an island? You know, and he'd be like, well, I don't know. You know, is there a problem? I go, no, there's no fucking problem. What did you hear? You know, and then they'd be, great, do another one. Literally, they go, great, do another one. So I'd come in and we'd try something else. And we'd try, there's like five takes that are all totally different. But it was, how can I, the objective was, how can I make life hard for Will's character?
Right.
How can I make it really hard for him? And so we would get tickled, and I couldn't get through. We would, like, break up. And I generally don't break in scenes.
Yeah.
And neither does Will generally.
Yeah, like two like but kings
would,
of improv.
We
like...
would get the giggles on this stuff because we realized the absurdity of what we were saying. You know, and I appreciate Will so much because he let us, he was willing to let us play.
Well, that first scene, the improv I was talking about, I mean, you come in hot with a hard F-bomb. Like, hey, your brother told me I'm tired of the faggot brother. And like, he just, boom, doesn't even flinch. Like, just keeps rolling with it. I mean,
that's got to be like getting like a hat tip from like Ted Williams. When if you make Will Ferrell laugh, like Ted Williams being like, yo, hell of a swing.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
I'm not going to lie. Walking off the set that day was, I don't know if my feet touched the ground.
Yeah, so. Even watching you right now, like it's cool to see because you're so passionate about a movie that's, it's not even a cult following. It's just beloved by everybody.
Yeah.
And you're like really passionate to talk about it. There was actually, what was it, 2 weeks ago or something like that? There was an oral history in The Ringer on it, and they said there's a 3-hour version of the movie.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm telling you, Adam McKay is, he's so good and he's so funny, but he loves to burn film, you know, and it's awesome because we do takes after takes. The way it generally works, is you do once as written in the script because that's what the studio paid for. And then the second take is with director notes. So the director comes in and says, hey, slow down this. Don't say that word so hard. You know, maybe smile a little bit. It's, you know, whatever. You get your notes. Then you do the second take with, as scripted, with the notes. And then on a third take, the director will come in, if you got it, you know, the third take, the director will come in and say, all right, that was great. Is there anything you want to try? And then you do a third take where maybe you do a little improvising or you play with something or you say a line that you think would be good, and then you move on. We did just like that, only after take two, we did about 15 more takes of just fucking around, playing and having fun. And can I try something? Yeah, do it. All right, and then you try something. And if it killed, it killed. And if it didn't, you moved on. And it was just a blast. And then, you know, same thing with the other guys. We did the same thing on the other guys. We got to play. Same team, same group of guys. And a lot of play.
There's some poor cameraman who's like, I got to go fucking home, guys.
Yeah.
You're funny and all, but I got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, enough.
call lunch.
Yeah.
Where's the union boss? Is that the most fun you've had on a set? Because like we went through, you had something. The Hangover has to be like another huge one, but this one seems like it kind of really sticks out.
Yes,
more
short
fun,
answer.
More fun than Rob Riggle's.
Nothing
Jesse
is as much fun
as
Rob Riggle's Ski Master Academy. I don't think anything's going to be as fun as that.
No, I do. I was just watching the trailer. It's kind of like it's almost your MO at this point. Is everyone wants to work with Rob Riggle?
It's
have so many awesome people
in the
that
trailer
show.
Alone. There's like 10 cameos. I was like, holy shit!
I
gotta
say, I'm very grateful because we didn't have money to pay anybody, so it was a lot of personal favors.
Sony Crackle's not cutting the big checks yet.
Not yet.
It's not coming.
We'll get them there.
Season two, they always
get them there. But they, I called every friend I had in town, and most of them called me back. And
remember that time you owe me?
I was like, I drove you home when you didn't have any clothes on. Get your ass down to set. No, I was very grateful they came out and played with us, and we have great guest stars, and it's 8 episodes. It's on SonyCrackle.com, or you can go get the app or whatever. But it's free, y'all. It's free. You can't beat 100% off. I don't know what you're doing, but go fucking get it because it's free and
honestly,
it's funny.
It's Rob. The Shooter McGavin was in there. David Arquette. I mean, the list went on and on.
Cheech
Marin. Listen, let me just say this. Cheech gets his fucking foot stuck in a bear trap. Okay, if that's not enough of a selling point, I don't know what is.
Yeah, we blow up a lot of stuff. Yeah. A lot of people die. It's crazy.
What is the story behind this idea of being a jet ski master and opening up an academy for jet ski
riding?
Yeah,
so we created a fictional world where there is a franchise of movies called the Ski Master movies, like Fast and Furious.
This is one of those things.
Before we go any further, are you a Fast and Furious guy?
Yeah.
My fucking.
Now, more importantly, is this gonna be like, I think this is one of those things where like it's a joke, and then all of a sudden they make a fucking Fast and Furious jet ski movie. You know what I mean? Like it's
copyright.
Not
Rob
to get ahead of ourselves, but
they said they're gonna go to space, so jet skis work perfectly
naturally.
Believe me, I've got a whole plan about a biodome on the moon with water, riding jet skis in the 360. It's all thing. Trust me, it'll work.
I'm in for anything. Yeah. Let's do it.
So we create this world where what Vin Diesel is to Fast and Furious, I am to the Ski Master movies, is jet skis. We're talking about jet skis here. And so it's, you know, it's Ski Master, Ski You Later, Ski Master, Ski No Evil, Ski Master, Revengeance, not even a word. You know, just this stupid chain of movies.
Ski No Evil is great.
So I'm the star of this, and I do what LeBron and Oprah do. I open my own school, and it's a jet ski academy. And because I believe that America can be made great through personal watercraft education. And it started as a joke, too, in Hollywood, because people would be like, what are you working on? What are you working on? I would go, I got tired of telling people my resume or telling people all the things that I'm doing. So I would just be, I go, I'm thinking about opening a jet ski academy. But then on the drive home, I'd be like, what would that world look like? And right. I started thinking, what would my cadets look like? What would my counselors look like? Who lives on the lake? You know, what's the world look like? So I just kind of started creating this thing, and then threw it out to a couple comedy buddies of mine, and they were like, yeah, we can make this work. So then we put together a pitch. I took it into Sony Crackle, pitched it to them, and they, God bless them, they had the vision. They were like, yeah, this sounds crazy
ridiculous.
Stupid. Ridiculous. I'm on board. So we're like, God bless you. So we did it, and we got eight episodes out of them.
I read the synopsis first, and I turned to John. I was like, this is a fucking weird show. And then you watch the trailer, and it like, without making any sense at all, kind of makes perfect sense. I was like, yeah, oh, I get it. It's like a camp world almost.
When you watch it, it's a lot of absurdity, mm-hmm, and a lot of ridiculous, a lot of silliness. But we did ground the scripts enough that you're like, okay, makes this sense. Is a
this
world,
is a story.
And there's a thing, and it's all in the realm. A
lot of improv on there.
A lot of improv. Yeah, a lot of improv. I brought in a lot of improvisers because I came up through the UCB here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So Paul Scheer, Eliza Coop, Billy Merritt, you know, a lot of people. The cast is made up of a lot of comedians and improvisers.
So do you still do stand-up?
I don't do stand-up anymore. I haven't done it. When I hosted the ESPYs, was kind of really the last time I did full-blown stand-up. I did host the NFL Honors, which had, you know, some stand-up.
You did NHL Awards a while back too, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And I did Rob Lowe's Roast. Those were what I put that in a stand-up category.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
But I haven't been out on tour. I haven't done my set in years because
it's fucking hard and doesn't pay as much as movies and
shit. Totally, the return on investment. Plus, crazy. My set was old. You know, I'd worked it for like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, when clubs call you, they're like, we want you back. I'm like, I ain't coming back with that same set because I got no new offering. Yeah. You know, the people, I don't want to buy a ticket to see the same set.
Right.
But it takes forever to build a set.
No, absolutely. I've actually, I mean, I'm not a stand-up comedian, but I'm trying to do everything in this world. We have a guy here who does stand-up, and I kind of said to him, I was like, I don't think I can do it because I'm just so, like, late. And he was like, he started laughing at me. He's like, you are so fucking late. You have no shot. He's like, it would take you 10 more years before you ever find something that's, like, good enough to get on stage because, I mean, I feel
he's
like,
just trying to scare you out of the business. He doesn't want the competition. Trust me. Anybody can do it. And here's how I know, because I was an improviser. I do long form improv, like down at UCB or what you'd find at Second City in Chicago or whatever. When I shared an office with John Oliver at the Daily Show, and I used to take him down to the UCB, and he would do monologues for the Ass Cat Show on Sunday nights, and he could play with us. And he knows that he's a good enough comedian that he knows his way around a bit, right? Mm-hmm. But then he would throw it back on me and say, "All right, you're coming with me tonight. We're going to hit 4 mics tonight after we get off work." And I was like, I don't know I don't like it. I don't know. I go, because
I know that.
Well,
that's how Kevin reacts when I ask him to go to drinks.
Yeah, you want to go somewhere? I don't like it.
Well, I remember when I first moved here, before I did anything, the first thing I did, I took a stand-up class at the Comic Strip Live, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the Upper East, and it was the guy teaching was like, it's 3 jokes per minute. It's what we do here, Buster.
Yeah.
Set up, punch. God damn it. And I was like, well, but I like Eddie Murphy Delirious and Raw, and I like the storytelling of comedy. Like, that's how I... And he's like, well, we don't do that here. So I did his way, and I hated it. So then that's why I thought I was turned off to stand-up. But then I was lamenting to John Oliver about it, and he's like, well, you don't have to do it that way. Who's this fucking guy?
Do it your way, yeah. Whatever's funny's funny.
And then I was like, oh, yeah, I guess I could trust myself, you big jerk. So he goes, all right, we're going out tonight. And I go, I got nothing. I'm literally starting at less than zero. And he goes, give me one funny story. Tell me one funny story. And I was like, okay, I got one funny story. He goes, that's it. That's all you're going to do. And you're going to do it 4 times tonight. And as and each time you do it, you're going to add something to it. You're going to
get a little better. Yeah.
So I started out first place, and I told a funny story, and it was about a 3 to 5 minute story.
Do you remember the story?
Yes. It was about me slipping and falling out of the shower. Okay. So I told that story, and it went okay. It was nothing special, I didn't think. But by the end of the night, I was like, there's something there, because I started to get more laughs by then. And I was like, this is how you do it? And he goes, yep. So I went back out with him the next night, and I did it again.
Dude, 50,000 more times.
And you add things, you change things, you pick out different verbiage, you do da 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 da. It's a craft. Like, you work at it, and you have to, and you listen to the crowd. And sometimes the crowd is shitty, so you didn't get the right feedback, so you got to do it again. And and all of a sudden, about 2 weeks into it, I had about a solid 8 minute set, and I'm like, shit, this is how you. So I laboriously built a set over a period of time. It took months and months and months, yeah. But I eventually built a big enough set that I could go out on the road and do the stuff. And so that I did that. But then when that set was done, I was like, I don't want to build this fucking thing again. Jesus Christ.
My kind of guy.
Yeah. And at that time too, I was living in LA,
yeah.
Which is way harder, in my opinion, to get the stage time. Mm-hmm. Like, New York is great.
If you're trying to
start as a stand-up, move to New York City, mm-hmm. because there are literally, you can hit 4 or 5 mics a night in this town.
And they give
it to
anybody.
And get some stage time.
I'm the biggest sucker with that, too, because whenever I go to stand-up, I go to watch. I don't go to participate.
Yeah.
But, come the end of the night, they kind of just, like, it's just a revolving door. And just letting anyone up. And I'm like,
I can't leave.
Well, he's really trying hard, so I'm gonna sit here. So
you're
I'm there
guy.
At 3 a.m. just fucking sitting there, like, hey, nice driving. <It's
all right." laughs> I got it. Good joke.
Yeah. I know where you were going with that. Yeah. So
it's a wild world, the grind. So Louis C.K. made his return last night. He hopped up on stage impromptu.
I saw a headline.
The Laugh Factor or
the Cellar.
I saw a headline about it this morning. That's all I saw.
Yeah, a weird road back, I would imagine, with trying to be funny after something like that.
I imagine it's tough.
That's all we gotta.
I don't know. I'm not gonna dive into this too much, but I also, man's got to be able to make a living. So you got to do what
the people were. The one thing that was upset, weird people were upset about, is that people didn't tell him he was coming, so they couldn't make it their own decision. People in the crowd, they stood up and gave him a standing O.
Yeah.
They made their own decision.
Yeah, in the moment.
They weren't handcuffed to the chair. Right, you can leave if you want.
It's true.
It's like, he should have been on the marquee if they were going to do that. That's not what he did.
Not how it works.
It was a drop in. Yeah. I'm kind of with you. I don't want to dive into it too much, but people weren't handcuffed. They could leave if they wanted to. It wasn't that much of a surprise.
I'm looking down here at your list of movies, and we had Ken Jeong on like a month ago, and we were talking about one of his movies he did. It was called like Vampire Suck or something like that. It was like I think it was literally like a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
One of those scary movie types.
Yeah, it was a parody of the vampire movie.
Okay.
And he said to us, "Oh, that was my yacht movie. I did that movie so I could buy a yacht." So I ask you, sir, if there is a yacht, what would be your yacht movie? What was one that you were like, I'll just do it for the check, or I'll just do it to, whatever?
It's funny. I have not been in a position yet where I have I don't know if it's a mentality or like an option or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because it just hadn't happened. And I'm not talking about money to buy a yacht, but a movie that I just did for the money.
Mm-hmm.
I do them all for the money.
Good answer. Very good stuff, man.
Yeah, no, I haven't done anything like that yet. But you always hear about that. But it's usually like some A-lister who does some movie that you're like,
it's like, what's going on here? Yeah.
But then you find out, you were paid a big fat ass check, and then they're like, and that's where they go, "That's for my Aspen house."
Yeah.
And you're like, whatever. Trust me, I'm not at an Aspen house yet. I'm still grinding.
Whatever, dick. All right, man. Well, so season one of Ski Master Academy is out on Crackle.
Yeah, it's a funny show, because I'm really proud of it because, and I'll just throw this last pitch in, but I am proud of it because I've worked on so many projects where what you start with is never what you end up with, because there's 1,000 chefs in the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
and it's usually corporate suits that come in and mess with the whole, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
This has been an amazing experience at Sony Crackle, because I feel like we got this through to what you're going to see is pretty damn close to what we started with. And that is rare. So this has probably got my biggest stamp of what I do on it than anything I've ever done.
Very cool.
I'm real proud of it, and I hope people enjoy it.
I mean, and again, when you look down the list of things, to hear that gets the full Wriggle seal of approval means something. Well, appreciate it. So you said you can see it online, SonyCrackle.com, or there's also an app. So either way.
Sony Crackle. And again, it's free. There's really no reason not to do it.
Go check it out.
It's a lot of fun. You're going to see people in it that you really enjoy. And we did it in a deconstruction way. So we like True Detective, we start at the end.
Okay.
And then in a press conference type vibe, like all the shit's gone down.
Everything's blown
and
up.
And then we hold a press conference. And then we go back and work our way back. So it's this weird.
Listen,
cool
I did
device.
Not expect there to be a True Detective comparison. Yeah, I'm extra hooked now.
Yeah. Speaking of True Detective, what you said earlier kind of reminded me of it with the too many cooks in the kitchen, because I thought that was what was wrong with season two. What's your big show right now?
Big show right now.
Are you a big
TV
guy?
Or
TV? Are you like a baseball player who's like, no, I do it all the time. I break from it.
No, I do want to. The desire's there to watch TV and film, because that's my industry. I should care about it, but I don't have time.
We don't listen to podcasts. I don't read blogs.
Busy between family demands and trying to feed the family. You know that I don't have time. Now, my wife did drag me into a show called This Is Us on NBC.
Oh yeah.
And it's a great show.
I've never seen that one. You're a big
tearjerker. Every episode, in the room.
Thank you. And I'm like, what are you doing to me?
There are some episodes that I'm just like, I mean, did that person need to die? Or does this person need to get cancer? Or whatever it is. I'm like, you're just trying to make me cry.
For a guy who just needs like a break, as you're saying.
Nah. That's not it.
Not the show
that's
to choose.
That's not it, man.
Ski Master Academy's your show.
That's how you wrap it.